Welcome to another audience interview brought to you by Kentucky Tourism and the Speed Art Museum. I'm your host today, Doug Driesback, and we are excited to catch up with comedian, singer, songwriter Rodney Carrington, who will be here in Louisville on March 24th at the Kentucky Center. Rodney's acts usually consist of a combination of stand-up comedy and originally written songs that have audiences laughing all over the place, usually agreeing with the topics at hand. So can't wait to talk to you today, Rodney, and welcome.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it.
Well, we're excited to have you on today, and even more excited about your tour to us here in March. And I'm sure you're excited to get back to Louisville, huh?
I am excited. I've always enjoyed coming there. It's always been a good time. The people nowadays that, you know, I think have seen me, been following me around for, God, I've been out here 34 years. So it's not like I'm seeing a lot of they're like family, really. Be honest with you. They just come to see what's going on next, you know, basically. So it's been a good, it's been a nice run.
Well, it's definitely been fun to watch. Your stand up is unique in the way that you not only have a hilarious setup and delivery of your jokes and content, but then you go for the knockout punch with your songs that are written and cleverly performed. And when you were kind of getting your start, what came first, the guitar or the comedy? And then when did you realize that traditional stand-up comedy mixed with the music was going to be your gig, was going to be your passion?
Well, the guitar came later. The guitar came out of boredom. I was on the road and traveling when I was in my early 20s. And I bought a guitar at a pawn shop and learned about three or four chords and then just started writing little pieces of songs. And then over time, the songs developed into longer ones. And that was how the whole guitar came about. And the songs, and it was simple as that. I mean, if I could have, back when I started, I mean, I would have utilized anything. All I wanted to do was try to figure out how to entertain people. I didn't have any sort of agenda outside of that, you know.
You got a great voice. I'm sure you've heard that many a times, but did you ever consider when the singing part took off that to go into a mainstream singing career, or did you always want to stay in the comedy genre?
Well, I've always, you know, I was never considering singing for a living because I felt like there were millions of people that did that. There's few people that do what I do at my level that are successful. You know, if you look around, I mean, I've exceeded my own expectations. You know, my whole life is a product of lack of planning. I didn't plan comedy. I didn't plan anything. It just kind of came along. It was something I tried when I was 20 years old and people laughed. And then I saw it as a freedom. I saw it as a way to get out of East Texas and go do something that I was enjoying. When I was sleeping in my truck when I was in my 20s, you couldn't have convinced me that I wouldn't live in the greatest life. You know, I mean, I guess I could look back and say it was a struggle, but it wasn't really, in my eyes, it was just great fun. And so, I still feel like that. You know, I think the world's a different place than when I started. I don't know how I'd start if I had to start today.
When you were growing up, kind of grade school, high school, your early 20s, were you always a funny guy? Were people saying you should be a comedian when you grow up or anything like that? Or what was your aha moment when you kind of realized, all right, I'm going to go try this when you were 20 years old?
Well, I mean, there was nothing that prompted it outside of, you know, I mean, I when I got into college, I got into some acting classes and theater, and I performed in a play, and people laughed at this play I was in, and that prompted me to maybe try something else. I mean, I asked the director at the time, hey, why can't we take this on the road? And he laughed. He said, your son, you're in college, you know, and then from there, the wheels just started turning, and I thought, well, what else is there? And they had a little open mic night in East Texas down there where I lived, and I went and tried it, and the first night they laughed, and then I spent the next couple of years trying to figure out what I did the first night. It wasn't that easy, you know. And I just hung in there. I kept trying to figure it out. I went anywhere and everywhere. And back then, you could afford to go anywhere and everything. Gas was about 70 cents. And I did. I went anywhere and everywhere. And then over about a 4 or 5 year period, I developed enough material and time myself that I was off and running in most of the bigger comedy clubs around the country. And then from that came everything else, came syndicated radio. And from syndicated radio came a record deal with Mercury, and eventually moved to Capitol. And from that came TV and everything else. All the success that I had came from my success on the road. A lot of guys would put together 15, 20, 30 minutes and move to California and hinge their whole career on whether or not they got a TV deal. And I just thought that was like panning for gold. Why am I going to go somewhere? And at that time, there was four networks, and determine whether there was four guys that ran them. So you really, like, I'm going to let my whole life be determined by whether or not four people think I'm funny or not. I thought that was stupid. I thought I wanted to build job security and longevity, so I set out to build an audience for myself. And it was real simple. I looked around and said there was whatever, 330 million people in the country. I said, if I can just get 1 million people who really like what I do to pay me, give me $10 a year every year for the rest of their life in a tape t-shirt, form of a tape t-shirt or a bumper sticker, you know, I might be able to make a living at this. You know, I just had kind of a simple plan. I treated it like I was just running a business. I never looked at it like, I never cared about what anybody else was doing. I was just going on my own little path.
So you got your main start. Was it, when was your first record deal?
Well, my first record deal was in 97.
So think of the world from 97 to today. And I guess somewhere along that career path from that first deal to today, the internet exploded. How did that sway your, I guess, understanding of it? And then the exponentially growing your brand and your content, to your point, to over 300 million people versus four people trying to determine if you're funny or not. That had to be a big break.
Well, no, I think everything played a role. I think it was, I don't know to what degree internet was. I was never a social media person. You know, they still have to drag me to get me to do anything on social media because I can't stand it. To be honest with you, I think it's it works in the form of promotion. I mean, but my audience was sort of course, some of the specials that I did and the albums and things like that were more accessible, I guess, to people. But I mean, I started in a time when the cassette tapes were coming out. My first comedy album was on a cassette tape, you know, and so I never really looked at there being any sort of transition. You know, there's a lot of people out there that become known on YouTube and this and that have done it that way, I guess. I don't know anything about it, and I don't know to what degree it played any role. It seemed like everything for me, there was no one particular thing. Any of the success that I had was coming out of the success that I was having on the road. Uh-huh. And the success that I was having on the road was coming out of my own efforts of selling. I'd go to some place and sell 10 cassettes, and then they'd go share it. Those 10 people would share it with 10 of their friends. And it grew like that. It grew like a network, you know, almost like network marketing. It was from a real grassroots place. And the people that come to see me now are the people that were seeing me then, that discovered me in their 20s. Well, now they're all older. We're all in our 50s now. So the people that I'm seeing are people that have grown up with me and that I've grown up with them. And they just kind of shared my life with me along the way.
Absolutely. So touching on that a little bit, what you got fans that have been with you since the beginning and hearing all your routines and stand up. Where do you get new content, and how do you, I guess, do you collaborate with friends or your team? You're sitting at a red light and something pops in your mind, you write it down, and then how do you test that content? How are you confident when you go on stage to say, all right, these people are going to like this skit or this joke or this song?
Well, I don't know. I'm never really confident. I hadn't been confident since I started outside of just, well, this is what I think. This is what I've, you know, when I think of a story, you know, or something that I'm going to tell, if it doesn't seem funny within the first couple of lines, you know, if you can't describe the story in a few lines, I've always thought that it's probably not worth telling. And in the very beginning, when I was doing stand up, I discovered that if I wrote it in letter form, like I was trying to make just one buddy of mine laugh, that there was something to it. You know, if I was literally just saying, "Hey, dear Doug, I'm on the road," you know, blah, 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 and I just was writing you a letter and my whole intent was making you laugh. Well, I discovered that that was the reality. What I was doing was I was writing letters to my friend, my buddies back home, and I'd send them to them and they'd laugh at them. And those were really kind of becoming the stories that I started telling. And that was kind of a little trick that I discovered when I first started of how it worked for me. And then as time went on, you know, my life evolved. I was married. I was had kids, and my kids are, of course, you know, I talked about them in my early albums and being married. And then my wife had left, you know, in 2000, whatever that was. And then, you know, my comedy has always been a reflection of what was going on in my life at that particular time. So mm-hmm. It's always come out of what was going on. It's a different place to exist in the comedy world now. A young guy starting out now would have to maybe, God knows what. I don't even know. You know, there's things I don't recognize in this that's being proposed, you know, in this world now. You know, I mean, neither does it. But the thing that I have going for me is that the people that have followed me all these years come from where I come from, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly a twilight zone sometimes out there, that's for sure. Thanks everybody for listening today. This is another audience interview brought to you by Kentucky Tourism and Speed Art Museum. We're here with singer-songwriter, comedian Rodney Carrington, who will be here in Louisville March 24th at the Kentucky Center. We're talking about his career, his content, how he comes up with different things. And Rodney, so when you go out on stage, this tour has quite a few stops, two in Kentucky, right back to back almost. Is there any kind of a script from show to show that you go by, or do you go out there with a few starters and see how it goes, or how do you manage your onstage content, I guess?
Well, I don't always guess right. I think I'm always trying to ask myself, well, how am I going to start, you know, tonight? But, you know, it doesn't matter who I ask, my sound guy, J-Dub, or anybody else, I never really listen. I just kind of go out and I just work off of what I'm given as far as, but there is a plan. I have a plan in place when I get out there. But the show, you know, it's funny when people talk about there being a tour. I started in 1989 and I have never quit. So I don't just tour and stop and then wait a long time and then tour again. I just keep going. And the show just evolves over time. It evolves at my convenience, in my time frame. That's how I've always operated. I've never ever thought of there gets to a point where I go, okay, I've ran this particular story long enough. And then I think I feel like I'm get somewhere else and I start talking about something else. And then it just slowly evolves that way. It slowly changes in that vein, you know.
Sure.
That's how I've always worked.
Did you have any early mentors, supporters, or influencers back in your earlier days? And even today, do you find yourself bouncing ideas or people that are kind of guiding you in what you do?
No. No, I didn't get in. I don't watch comedy at all because I do it for a living. But I don't. It's not something believe it or not, it's not something I'm really that interested in mm-hmm. watching. And it doesn't define my life either, you know. I mean, like I do it for a living and I have, and I'm very grateful to have had this opportunity, you know, all these years. But, you know, my life is pretty simple, you know. Like everybody else's, I come home and go to the grocery store and mow the yard, you know, figure out what else I'm going to do, you know.
Well, we can't wait to see you here in March at the Kentucky Center in Louisville. For fans that have seen you before and also for fans that have not seen you before, what can some of the audiences expect from your show here in Louisville and then, of course, other other places on
the internet. I would tell anybody, if you don't know what I do, then you probably ought to go on the internet and look around. You know, it's kind of like buying a car. You want to do your homework or just come. I don't care. I don't want to be the source of anybody's misery. You know, some people will come and go, well, I just didn't know what I was getting into. Well, you should do your homework. What dumbass doesn't read about where they're going or doing or what car they're buying before they take it off the lot? It's like, if, you know, and if you learn anything from what it is I'm saying, it was a complete accident. You know, I have no agenda except make people laugh. And I'm content with just that, you know. So I don't know what to tell anybody what to expect. I mean, if they've never been to a stand-up show or anything, or a comedy show, if you come with expectations that you're going to learn something, you're going to be highly disappointed. If you just come with an open mind and you want to have fun and laugh, and then come on. If not, I don't care.
Well, awesome. And Ronnie, can't thank you enough for joining us today. And we really look forward to seeing you here in Louisville. Any last words for the Louisvillians and audiences getting ready to come see you? Check you out on March 24th.
Just try to enjoy your life. And if you come see me, I look forward to it. And Doug, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
We're excited to have you, and thank you everybody for joining us today for another audience interview brought to you by Kentucky Tourism and Speed Art Museum. Be sure to check out Rodney Carrington on March 24th at the Kentucky Center for the Arts, and get your tickets at KentuckyPerformingArts.com. I'm your host today, Doug Driesbach, and we hope you've enjoyed this interview. And for more audience interviews and the latest in arts and entertainment in Louisville, visit audience502.com. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.